Here we go. We got a podcast going today. I wanted to go through the offensive performance against the Minnesota Vikings. I know it's a week late, but I have all the notes and my thoughts on the Redskins' offense against the Vikings. Some of the trades around the NFL, some of the non-trades, which included the Redskins, we'll go through. Some of the just generic NFL news, where we sit halfway through the season in terms of the power rankings. But first, I want to start with the Washington Nationals. I watched the game last night, start to finish, all commercials, did not change the channel,
yeah.
Just rolled with it. Wow, what a game.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was start to finish awesome. Steven Strasburg was absolutely outstanding. He got better and better as the game went on, and he's been, I think he's essentially been slotted over part of his career as maybe soft or as the orchid. Not the case last night. That was a gutsy performance. I thought it was interesting, too, afterwards in a interview on the field with Tom Verducci, he said, what changed after that first inning? And he said, well, I started butterflying or moving my glove differently so they couldn't identify my pitches. I was given a tip that they knew the pitches that were coming, and so I had to adjust the way I handled my glove so they didn't understand the pitches. It is really amazing that just the simple art of deception changes everything. I'm just wondering when the Astros understood that Steven Strasburg knew that they knew his pitches. But he just got better and better and better as the game went on. And it was so much fun to watch. He was absolute control as he went through that lineup. And that is, I mean, you start with Springer and Altuve and Brantley, and then you get to Bregman. I mean, they're a tough lineup top to bottom. They are a tough lineup top to bottom, and Strasburg was absolutely awesome. I mean, a couple spots where he got in trouble. In the middle of the game there, he's got runners on second and third and one out, and he strikes out Altuve and then gets Brantley out. Like, whew, that was a critical moment in that game. But, I mean, huge congratulations to Steven Strasburg. Great adjustment on the Strasburg front right there. A couple fun thoughts from the game. I mean, for one, Rendon was unbelievable. I mean, Rendon is so good right now. The Nationals have to re-sign Rendon. I mean, that home run that he hit after the Trey Turner first base incident was incredibly, incredibly massive. I did think that was interesting, though. You know, the Trey Turner interference call at first base has been one of the hottest topics from this game, and I sat there and I watched the game, and I didn't in any way understand or agree with the call. Turner hits a short dribbler to the left side of the infield, and as he follows through, it takes him over the plate a little bit to the left side of the line that goes down first base, and I thought he stayed directly straight, if not drifting towards the end. The ball, by the way, was not catchable.
Yeah.
The ball was thrown behind and was also not going to get the runner out, which I think made it interesting. No one ever said that or talked about that on the broadcast. But John Smoltz did compare it while he was calling the game as a judgment call to the likes of NFL pass interference. Well, in the pass interference judgment call, the ball has to be catchable. Mm-hmm. The play wasn't going to be made. Turner was going to be safe. So I think it was absurd that when you go to replay, and by the way, they don't go to replay to change that call. They went to the headset because the Nationals wanted to put the game under protest, which I understand. Davey Martinez was absolutely furious. They're not going to overturn that play. But the thing is, it's like these judgment calls, like that one, I don't know. It is like pass interference, I guess, if you say it's an absolute judgment call, because in bang, bang, heat of the moment, do you know that that ball was not catchable? Do you know that that ball was, it may have been catchable, but was that ball going to get him out? It's hard to say in the moment, but in the World Series where everybody in the world's watching and 99% of people think, and probably even Astros fans think, he definitely didn't interfere. He drifted towards the middle of the bag. His foot hit the middle of the bag. The ball, his hip hit the glove after or before the ball had I don't know. I think he was safe. I think it was a bad call. I also thought it was interesting that moment where Smoltz, in calling the game, kept saying, yeah, the Nationals could have let that get them down, but they still got two runs out of the inning. They had runners on second and third if Turner's safe with no outs. That didn't have to be a two-run inning. That could have been a big inning. Yeah. They got two runs because Rendon came up big. You know, the other BS part of that rule is that the runner, Gomes at the time, who was on first, would have been safe at second in a fielder's choice situation had Turner been called out, then has to go back to first base. That's a brutal rule.
Yeah.
And lastly, I thought it was interesting listening to them talk about calling the game, that if it's close, throw it towards the home plate side of the base, hoping that you can actually get that call. And it seems a little fishy, but then you think about pass interference and you see like a receiver fall down at times and quarterbacks throw it at their feet, hoping to get a pass interference call. You play it out as much times as you have in your career, and maybe you're hoping to get that call. So I don't know. I didn't like it. I don't think any Nats fan liked it. It didn't make sense to me as a sports fan. Sometimes you see that call and you can see intent by the runner. I didn't see any intent by Turner, so I think it's one of those things where you have to be able to look at it and say, "We, the judgment on the field wasn't what it seems." I just think, and this is to all of these judgment calls in general, you know, the pass interference calls, we don't want to slow down football. They're also not going to change their judgment because any slightest thing that could occur, the slightest thing to say that actually is pass interference or that is this, they're going to stick with it. Because they don't want their judgment to be clouded by instant replay. I think the World Series, especially, and I think the playoffs in the NFL, we should just get it right. They have the technology. They have the equipment. They have the understanding. You should just get the call right. The regular season in the NFL, pass interference can change a game. One game can change a playoffs. I understand all of that. But in a win-or-go-home situation, let's just get the right call made. It doesn't matter if it takes 10 minutes to figure it out in that moment. It does in week three if you're sitting there wasting time watching a call over and over. But, I mean, for the most part, most people don't watch it straight through commercial by commercial like I did. So normally when I'm watching a game, if I don't want to waste time watching a call, I just DVR fast forward. So I don't know. I'm sitting here watching it again and again and again and again, and I just can't see anything. But I do understand if you want to say a judgment call, Trey Turner is on the left side of the line the entire time. His foot hits the grass a couple times. He does hit the mitt or the glove of the first baseman. All right. I don't know. The last thing I thought was interesting from that game, Alex Bregman hits a home run in the first inning, and he carries his bat to first base.
Yeah, all the way.
You know, in the moment, I had two thoughts. He actually rounded the base. It looked like he tried to hand it to the first base coach. Mm-hmm. One, how does the first base coach not just get the bat? Like, obviously, you see the guy's got a bat in his hand, and he's holding it out. How did we drop that bat? I don't get that. Two, My first thought was, it's the World Series. He's trying to ensure that that bat gets back to him. Like when you catch a touchdown and you're like, I'm going to keep this ball. I'm going to save this ball. But you don't think the bat boy is going to make sure that that bat goes back to where you want it? I did maybe three. Maybe it's the first inning of game six and you're super pumped up and you just
Forgot?
Like you never hit a home run before? None of it made any sense. Five? Why? After you round first base, what happens if you just take the bat the entire way? And why can't we take the bat the entire way?
Yeah. Or two, when it's a home run, just you can like slightly, lightly put it down and then go.
You could do whatever you want. Right. You could bat flip now if you want to bat flip.
Yeah.
But what if someone just, would it be worse if he rounded second with it? Like realized he had it and dropped it? Okay. I didn't see anything I didn't think that Bregman did it as a slight to the Nationals, though. And watching his body language, it didn't seem to me like he knew what he was doing or did it with malintent. It just seemed like it was weird.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would have been one thing if he ran all the bases with it, but the fact that it was right after first base that he dropped it or put it down, I don't think it was malicious.
Do any other Nationals besides Juan Soto take their bat to first base after that moment? Because when Juan Soto took his bat to first base, I was so pumped. I was so pumped. That was one of the coolest moments for me in the game, is Soto's home run, which, by the way, was an absolute jack. Which, by the way, if you're sitting there watching that game, I was watching Verlander pitch Soto. He had like a couple balls up high, pitched him in the strike, high in the zone the entire count, and he's down in the count where he's got to throw a strike, but he stayed high. I'm like, I'm sitting there at home, like, he's going to throw him a fastball high. Boom, fastball high. Soto's a smart player. I'm a smart fan. We both knew it was fastball high. He took that for a freaking run. It was like 413 feet. There are a couple bombs in this game. Rendon's shot wasn't that close, but he knew it was out. Mm-hmm. Bregman knew it was out. Soto knew it was out. Like, they just, that's got to be, there's cool feelings in sports. And I played high school baseball. I don't think there's a better feeling than hitting a home run. Hole in one in golf. Like, a touchdown in football is not as good of a feeling as hitting a home run in baseball. There's
really?
There's no way.
Why?
Hitting a home run that you just smashed has to be one of the best feelings. Like, off the bat, gone. See ya. You got to feel like a hero.
Yeah, but what about, like, an 80-yard touchdown?
80-yard touchdown's a pretty cool deal. I never scored an 80-yard touchdown.
But what if you
too
did?
Slow. I think I scored a 60-yard touchdown. That was really, really cool, but then you're exhausted. there's some fun moments in football. I don't know if there's any better, just one initial one-off feeling. Hole-in-one in golf's got to be the one thing in a PGA event.
Yeah.
Besides big-time home run in the World Series. Think of it on the highest stage, right?
Yeah.
Like, in the highest stage, the highest moment, touchdown in the Super Bowl or home run in the World Series. 80-yard touchdown in the Super Bowl is never going to be forgotten, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's actually a tough one.
Tough.
I can't call it. But really proud of the Nats. I am super pumped. Oh, The one thing you can't forget. There was no way they were going to pitch Scherzer in that game. There's no way. He's out there warming up again. I swear there's no chance they're pitching Scherzer. I looked at Scherzer, and it reminded me of being a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old kid watching a football game at home, watching the Denver Broncos, getting into halftime. The game's close, and I can't watch anymore. I got to put on all my stuff, and I got to go out and play by myself. I swear it reminded me of that moment. It did not look like he was doing anything other than, I got to get up and throw some balls right now because I can't sit and watch this game, and I'm going to get ready for tomorrow even more.
Yeah.
I don't think he was going in. I don't think there's any chance he was going in. At the point he was warming up, I think it was the 7th, Strasburg was sitting there 83 pitches. Strasburg wasn't coming out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess maybe you're a winner-go-home situation. Maybe you want to get an inning out of Scherzer. Can you get an inning out of him and then still pitch him tonight, which is the next night? I just didn't think he was going in, but I just loved it because I think he's so fiercely competitive that he couldn't sit and watch the game. I think that's what it was. I'd love to hear him talk about it, but I think it was just that moment where he had to get up and do something. I don't know. I could be way wrong on that one, but that's what it reminded me of as a little kid. I get that feeling every once in a while in a Redskins game. Not necessarily this season, but, like, I'll just come out of the booth. Just come on. You see a bad play or you see something happen that you're like, I can.
You got to get up.
Damn it, I can do it. There's been a couple games where I've had to stand up to call the game. Like, here we go. And it's been a long time now. Mm-hmm. I am going to go through that game, I promise you. I want to remind everybody, this podcast is sponsored by Window Nation. I got to say thanks to the guys at Window Nation, Harley and Aaron, who do an unbelievable job. If you're looking for new windows in your home, they hooked me up big time. I have a ton of windows. They were meticulous with how they did it. It was fast. It worked out. They're guys you want to be around. They're in your house. They're amazing. Go to windownation.com to check them out. They do, I promise you, they do a heck of a job. Couple notes from around the league. Obviously, the trade deadline has come and gone. It was yesterday. The Redskins did not make any trades. Trent Williams has now reported to Redskins Park. We'll see how that goes. If he's ready to play, if they're going to play him, if there's any way you can get that year told back onto his contract, it's probably in their best interest to do that because he'd have more trade value at the end of the year. It's got to be frustrating for everybody involved. You look at this season right now and you're saying 1-7. Me personally, that's a move on point to next year. Now, the coaching staff and the players still have to try to win ball games because that's what they're designated to do. Yep. They're here to win games. But for me, if you can get anything out of Trent Williams, even a second, I would have pulled the trigger. That may not have been the case. If we've talked about this a million times, and I'm always uncomfortable talking about this because I love Trent and I know what he is as a player. I know who he is as a guy. I love him. He's a great guy. I know what he is as a player. I know the impact that he has on a ball game. But if it's not going to work, which is what it seems like, it's not going to work. So even if it's a second or a second player, I would have loved to have pulled the trigger. I doubt it was.
What do you think?
I doubt it was. And I've referenced the Antonio Brown trade to Oakland earlier in the year. Obviously, Antonio Brown's a different kind of dude. The Raiders didn't know he had quite the problems that he was going to have. But it was a third and a fifth because they were going to have to do a new deal. Any team that wants to sign a contract, essentially, as I've read and understand, is going to have to negotiate a new contract with Trent Williams. They're saying, we don't want to negotiate a massive contract with a 31-year-old offensive lineman. We're sorry we don't. Well, not for a first. We want to know that Trent Williams is going to be here. Mm-hmm. If they trade for him and they still have to negotiate a contract, he's a year away from free agency, which means they could have him for a year and a half. It's not worth a first to another team. Even a second at that point is a little bit sketchy because you don't know. A second's better because you don't have the fifth year option. On a first, you're not giving away a first. You have 5 years of another guy with a first. You can guarantee you have 5 years of another guy. You're not giving away a first unless he is saying to you, I'm going to play the two for sure, or I'm going to do a deal that works for you. I just want to play for you, X team. I don't know if they got a second. I'm just sitting here saying to you that if I'm the Browns, who were one of the popular teams, they're 2-5. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily Super Bowl run material. That's salvage your season material, hope to make the playoffs material. I ain't giving a second for that if I'm Cleveland. I think there are a couple other interesting situations, but for the most part, I don't know if any of the Super Bowl type teams needed him. So there you are. No one's going to give a first. The Redskins didn't want to do less. I do think I would have pulled the trigger on a second, which means I don't know if they even got a second. I always hate saying this, but in the time, you have a huge cap hit again on Ryan Kerrigan next year. If you could have gotten any value there, and I heard that there were a couple teams that inquired about Kerrigan, also including the Colts, who are a team that could make a Super Bowl run or a big playoff run. I doubt that the offers were enough there on a guy that with a year and a half left in his deal as well. I would have done a third there. I don't think that offer came in for a third. So that's where you're at. You're 1-7. I'm sure the coaching staff's happy about not trading those players.
I'm sure.
It's one of those really hard deals. The Dolphins are in the midst of doing this tanking thing where they're making subtle decisions in games that give them worse opportunity. They're making anti-analytic decisions. They had a third down and 20 some at the end of the half against Pittsburgh, up 14-3. The Dolphins, after a timeout, came out and zero blitzed them. All out blitzed them. Pittsburgh scored a touchdown at the end of the half. That's called making subtle decisions to have a chance to get beat. That's what that is. Going for two against the Redskins and putting in a running back who hadn't run the two-point play all week in practice is a subtle decision to just lose a ball game. You're not necessarily, you still have a chance. You're just not giving yourself the best chance. Those are subtle decisions. But I think it's different, especially when you have an interim coach, because I think this coaching staff and every coaching staff in the situation they're in should feel this way. So I'm fine saying this, believes that they have a chance to coach this team next year. They want to coach this team next year. They want this job. Coach Callahan wants to be the head coach in Washington. He needs to win games. He needs to get this team going. He needs to turn this thing around. So he wants Trent Williams, and he wants Ryan Kerrigan, and he wants all these guys. But he needs to do it right now.
Yeah.
If you were to say to him, promise you, five-year deal, here you go, he'd probably be on the table saying, let's get the draft picks. Let's get some capital. Maybe let's make subtle decisions to lose games, because, by the way, the first two or three picks are so valuable.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, a lot of teams seem to understand how valuable they are. There are some bad football teams out there. Bengals, Dolphins, Jets, Falcons. Falcons are 1-7 as well. Broncos are 2-6 right now. They've lost four or five games. Are they 2-6 or are they 2-5? They're not very good. There are a lot of bad football teams out there.
Broncos are 2-6, just for the record.
2-6.
Yep.
This is a battle to get into the top five. No, seriously, this is a battle to get in the top five.
Yeah, I didn't realize there were a lot of teams, or a good handful of teams that were pretty winless.
I'm looking up the standings. No, there really are some bad teams.
Even this too, like Chargers are 3-5, Raiders 3-4.
The Chargers are going to win more games than the Redskins this season. That's not a bold prediction. The Chargers just fired their offensive coordinator, Ken Wisenhunt, who'd formerly been head coach and been head coach in Tennessee. Fired again. Giants are 2-6.
Oh, right.
Tampa's 2-5. Nobody else is going to be close in this race. Cleveland's going to win more games. So you got the Jets, the Dolphins, the Bengals, the Falcons. Broncos, the Falcons, the Buccaneers. Maybe the Bears. Their defense is too good. Trubisky's terrible right now.
What is their record right now?
They're 3-4. Trubisky's awful right now, and they're playing in the good division, so they have some tougher games down the stretch. Also a 12-win team, so they had to play some tough games throughout the year, a couple extra tough games. Yeah, I don't know. There's seven teams here, and us, throw it in for the eighth. I didn't count us. There are eight teams in the battle for the top five.
Wow.
Look, I don't want to root this way, but I just have this understanding, obviously without any connection to a job, that the picks 1, 2, and 3 hold drastically more value than picks 4, 5, and 6. They do. 1 and 2 especially. That second pick gives you a ton of options. We'll find out. couple other thoughts around the league. The Bengals benched Andy Dalton. Ryan Finley is in, had the amazing preseason. I'll be really, really interested in Finley. We watched a ton of tape on a lot of the quarterbacks. Finley was one of my favorite quarterbacks.
I was going to say, you were pretty high on him.
Coming out of NC State, I thought he was potential late first, second-ish, accurate passer, not a huge arm, knew where to go the ball, good anticipation. I think Finley gives him a better chance than Dalton. Dalton will be free agent next year. So, I don't know. There's no real big free agent signing quarterbacks. Well, there are, but Breeze and Brady, but I mean, they're not coming here.
I don't know if they're going anywhere.
No, they're not going anywhere. Joe Flacco will be a free agent quarterback as well, who is now out with a neck injury. The one interesting thing I thought with Flacco was after the game, he really criticized the coaching staff for not taking chances late in the game. I watched that game. Joe, if you're my quarterback, we can't take chances. It was one of those interesting things where he said the staff's got to take chances late in the game. They got to believe in us. This is basically called him out. I'm the head coach. I'm calling him in my office tomorrow, and I'm saying, one, the reason I didn't take a chance because I didn't believe in you. Two, you're benched. It's as simple as that. It's absolutely as simple as that.
They were in the game, too. I mean, they only...
They're in every game.
Yeah, 15 to 13 against the Colts.
I know. They're in every game. Yeah. Keep watching the Colts. Keep watching the Colts. They're a pretty good ball club. Don't sleep on the Colts. Don't sleep on Eberflus getting a head coaching job at the end of this year. He will. Their defensive coordinator has done a phenomenal job in Indy over the last 2 years, playing simple coverage with a lackluster defense in terms of roster. That will be a head coaching candidate who will be one of the top candidates and maybe my top candidate in general. Okay. The Redskins game. I watched this game about three times on offense, and I just have a few thoughts on the game, and I wanted to go through, and not necessarily a like old school Cooley style grade every player by grades, which I did do. I still can't help but do it. But I just wanted to go through a couple of my thoughts from the game. One, it was a ball game that you were in. I don't necessarily know if I see it as a game that you gave away. Minnesota really seemed to control that game and never was forced to get out of what they were doing offensively or defensively. They never had to panic. We could have put them in some tougher situations. We could have scored some points throughout that game that would have helped. Like the first opportunity down in the red zone where you have a first and goal from the two and you have Adrian Peterson in Minnesota running the ball effectively and you end up going with a three-step drop back on first down and almost throw a pick.
Yeah.
To me, that's three straight rundowns. The momentum that occurs from running the ball in right there with Adrian Peterson is massive. It's not just a seven-point opportunity, which I think you would have gotten running the ball. They did run it once for a loss. It is a extended momentum. We can run the ball on the road in Minnesota against this defense. And Adrian Peterson is going to get the thing done. That was tough. The first play down on the two, they run two sticks from their outside, two five-yard outs, and then the inside receivers are running flat. They're trying to create picks to throw the flats, and if they don't, then they're coming back down to the inside five-yard out. Neither of the two stick routes get picks, and then McLaurin, instead of breaking out, drifts back into the middle of the field, and Case throws it into the middle of the field. That's a near-pick situation. Try to run it on second down. Vikings blitz. I'm assuming they had an option to throw a fade outside because the receiver's running a fade, so I know they did. Probably was a look where you should have thrown it there. Did not have a good look to run the ball. Get beat across the tight end's face on the backside. Adrian Peterson's tackled in the backfield. And then on third down, you have an incompletion to Quinn and a holding on Brandon Scherff, which was a hold. Field goal. Here we go. Case had a couple sack fumbles. You know, early in the game, he had a sack fumble. I just think it's hard to put a tight end in pass protection on one of the better pass rushing defensive ends in the league, in Everson Griffin. I think it's really hard when you put the tight end off the ball. Coaches, as a tight end, we ask for a lot of things. I want to be on the ball for a play action or a run action pass, because as soon as I'm off the ball, they have pretty good expectation that they can rush up the field. Put me on the ball. At least I can sell run for a second and a half. Case on that particular play, the sack fumble early in the ball game, did drop to about 12 yards and did slide up slow. You still got to protect the ball. Sack's a sack, but you got to protect the ball. You can't give it up. And then he fumbled again down in the red zone at the end of the half. And that would ended up being the concussion play. That was on a kind of a broken down play. He hit the ground pretty hard. I'm not going to say anything about protecting the ball in that situation. I mean, he hit the ground pretty hard that play. So, I did think, though, for a point in that game, that the offense had phenomenal rhythm.
Yeah, they were driving.
That drive where they went down and, God, just got three. It was like run on first down, run action pass on second down, drop or on first down again, drop back on first down, screen on first down. They had all like the tight end screen that they had mixed in. They had shot after shot after shot. They got good runs in first down situations. They were better in first down situations in the first half of that ball game. Really, I thought the offense had some flow and had some rhythm, but they had to find a way to score touchdowns. It's two straight games now that we haven't scored a touchdown. They have to find a way to score some more touchdowns. I thought Case was good. I thought he made accurate throws. I thought he made good decisions across the board. And you were where you wanted to be at the half. Well, until 2 minutes before the half, and then we couldn't stop Dalvin Cook on two screen passes, and that is really frustrating. But this is an offensive side of the thing. Before we get to the rest of the offense and Dwayne Haskins, 75 tons of game day trash and recyclables need to find a home. So when the final whistle blows, our team hits the field. As an official partner of the Washington Redskins, RTS is connecting with FedEx Field. We're connecting with smarter waste solutions to ensure a more sustainable and responsible approach to what's left behind at the end of the game. RTS, a better waste company. Find out more at RTS.com. Helping people improve their lives is what should drive business. That's the belief at Koch Industries, which employs more than 65,000 people across America. The team at Koch works together to meet the world's changing needs in transportation, medical care, water filtration, household goods, energy-efficient building products, and everyday technologies, all while consuming fewer resources. See the innovations firsthand at KOCH, that's KochIndustries.com. The fantasy football season is right around the corner, and this season there are more ways to win than ever. Because FanDuel has more ways to win cash prizes and once-in-a-lifetime experiences during every single game, every single week. Never played FanDuel fantasy football before? Great. Because new users get a $5 bonus with their first deposit. Sign up for FanDuel now and get $20 in total bonus. Just make your first deposit and get started, and you'll get an extra $5 insight credit every week for 4 weeks. Go to FanDuel.com or download the FanDuel app. Now there's more to be excited about on Mondays than just Monday nights, because this football season, Mondays are Redskins Mondays. Every Monday you can get a free 6-inch sub with the purchase of another sub of equal or greater price and a 30-ounce drink. Go to redskins.com/subway to get a coupon that can be redeemed on your mobile phone or in print any Monday during the Redskins season at your local Subway. Free sub excludes extras, limited time only at participating restaurants in the greater D.C. metro area. Plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Dwayne, first of all, we got to find a way to move the chains in the second half. It doesn't matter if it's Haskins, if it's Case, if it's Colt, if it's Trey Quinn playing quarterback. We got to find a way. We had 11 first downs in the first half, which is really good for this offense. 22 would be a pretty good day for the Redskins where we're at right now. Three in the second half. Just did not move the chains. And you had opportunities down on the other side where you had to score points. You had an opportunity off a 4th-and-1 idiotic go for on the 38-yard line, or you say that, but maybe they knew they'd get a stop. You got to find a way to get points there. Dwayne Haskins was 3 for 5 on the day. I'll go through pretty much all of the dropbacks and some of the essential plays. He comes in, you have a handoff right away, weak side zone out of gun with the bubble option on the side of it. I thought he could have thrown the bubble. Thought he had leverage to throw the bubble. Next play is a bootleg that he completes to Jeremy Sprinkle. If you have a chance, I don't know if you can see this, if anyone DVR'd the game or if you have NFL All 22. Minnesota has a too high coverage. Harrison Smith is the too high safety to the side that they're booting to. He bites way up into the middle of the field. If Dwayne has his eyes down the field, it's a walk-in touchdown to Terry. A walk-in touchdown. The safety bites, the corner's up, flat in cover two, who ends up hitting Sprinkle, and old 17 is whoop, walking into the end zone. I know that we want to take the easy money play, but the boot flat into cover two is never great because that corner's going to sit right there for your tight end. Sprinkle did a good job running through that and getting some yards after the catch. But if you have a chance to watch that one again, that is six. Make the throw. You had time to. Got to get your eyes up and make that throw. Third down situation on that drive. He had a choice route by Trey Quinn, which I want to talk about a little bit later. Trey's blanketed. Motion comes over. He's walled to the sideline. On those choice sides, you send the other receiver on that side either on a corner or a skinny post. Almost always. The corner, Terry, does a heck of a job winning to the corner, crossing a three deep cornerback's face. And that throw gets disregarded by quarterbacks at times. They think we have to focus on the choice route. The one-man show is the choice. It's third down and 4, 5, 6, whatever it is. We throw the choice. We move the chains. We're good. You got one-on-one with 17 on a corner. Take it. Mm-hmm. That's the better play. At that point, that's the better play. We're at this point, we're understanding that when Trey Quinn motions to a stack set, he's running that choice route. Now, a lot of times you hope it's a win no matter what because we're going to trust him to go one way or the other and win. But they drop pretty soft. He really had only an outbreak. Throw that corner out. Made a throw to Adrian Peterson on a check down on the next drive. They were trying to take a shot in run action pass to Terry. You got to be quick to that check down. It was almost a pick. It was a fun throw because you're watching it in the game, and that's a sidearm throw around a lineman. It's good arm angle. But that ball's almost picked by Kendricks.
It was at first, and I was like, no.
No. No. Was sacked later in the drive. Not necessarily his fault. Vikings brought a 5-man pressure. They had a line slide with their center, left guard, and left tackle going left. Linebacker walked up into the B gap. And Flowers just didn't see him or was late getting to him, kind of got held. It's not necessarily his fault in that situation. An interception, ball was high. I want to talk about this for a second. We watched all that college film, and he threw a ton of high balls in college. And I didn't play quarterback, but I've seen a lot of quarterback play. And when you drive a throw, if you take your drive foot or your left foot for a right-handed quarterback and open it up, like don't drive it straight at your target, but open it up, you're opening your hips up and allows that ball to come out high, and it's exactly what happened. His left foot steps about 8 inches open. Wow. So you got to drive that foot straight through. I think the footwork hurt him on that. Now, it's one of those things where a lot of people can throw with a square, like their waist square to the receiver and still be accurate. But he seems to throw high ball when he does that. So he's got to drive through that ball. Then my last thought, and this is indicative of a backup in a lot of situations, is you just got to be faster from huddle to line of scrimmage. The tempo's got to be faster. The play call's got to be right now. It's got to be quick. It's got to be moving. That's the thing he's got to work on. You saw the illegal formation. You saw the lack of urgency down in that game late, but it wasn't a lack of urgency. It was just I don't want to say inability, but the slowness of getting the play to the line of scrimmage. So that's something that they'll have to, if he's going to play this week, they'll have to shorten some play calls and they'll have to simplify some things. And that's, and I've said this all along, that's not because Dwayne can't handle it in the long run. It's just because he played in an offense where he clapped the snap count and they had one word names and it was very fast and very easy for any quarterback. All these college quarterbacks have to figure out how to do this stuff. You see lots of them struggling right now. So you got to just abbreviate. When you do abbreviate, and the problem with coaches is they don't like to abbreviate, is they want to be able to tag every receiver so they ensure that all the receivers know what they're doing, all the eligibles. You got to trust that they're going to learn. There's only a certain amount of plays week in and week out in the game plan. And so if we call Zebra Chubby out of any set, you got to know what you have away from it on the other side. Just learn it. Just learn the one word code as a receiver. It's really not that hard. You can do that. The receivers can do that. The coaches just have to trust that. And so that's something that they'll have to do moving forward. A couple other thoughts from the game as we go through. One, tight ends. This has been a tough year for tight end in this building. It seems that everybody, we've had Reed not play. Vernon Davis hasn't played. Cunningham got hurt. We're Sprinkles doing a good job this year, and you're down to Hale Hinches. And by the way, played Bergstrom at tight end a lot in that game. I don't know if anyone noticed. Bergstrom played a lot of tight end in that game. Here are my thoughts. One, in the run game, they got to be better with their eyes. Their eyes are down. I'll cite the second down and two play on the goal line where Sprinkle got beat across his face. His eyes are down straight at the ground the entire time. And I know what he's doing. He's on the left side of the line of scrimmage, and he's trying to peek in with his right eye, his peripheral vision, to see the football snapped. You don't have to do that. Look up. When the guy in front of you, the guy in front of you is watching the ball. He's got better vision of the ball. He's going to go when the ball is snapped. When he goes, the ball is snapped. Go on him. If he did look up, he would have seen Harrison Smith creep right to the edge of the line of scrimmage, which is a tell that the backer in front of him, Barr, is going to go directly across his face. When someone comes outside of them, the player inside takes the gap inside. It's very simple gap football. Dusty would have understood it. Dusty would have not got beat. Got to be better with his feet. Everyone's got to be better with their feet. They got to be faster with their feet, and they got to be better with their hands and eyes. Simple as that. They have to sustain better. They have to get more drive. The other thing I've noticed from a couple of the tight ends, Sprinkle's base is way too wide in the run game. He's not getting movement because he's stopping his feet once his base gets too wide. It's really hard to move forward when your feet are 6 inches extended from shoulder width. Try it. It's not easy. Anybody can go try it. It's not easy. He's got to trust that he can drive a little bit more with his feet. Getting your base real wide is basically what I always thought of as hanging on. Like, if I get my base wide, I can really hang on. Yeah, but hanging on the line of scrimmage isn't really helping you. Getting your base wide makes it easier to shed you, makes it harder for you as a tight end to move players. Hanches is just got to be more aggressive. He's stepping way too far to create initial not get beat leverage as opposed to create a drive opportunity. So those are my couple things. Oh, also, when we're chipping in protections, they're just chips, guys. Like, just bump them and go. Like, we're fully blocking defensive ends for a second half. We don't need to do that. We can trust our offensive line to get the job done. So in the run game, our tight ends do have to be better. I do think that Bergstrom was pretty good in the run game in the tight end spot. So that's, I don't know. The Seattle Seahawks did it last year a ton of the year. They didn't have a tight end that they trusted in their base, so they put an extra offensive lineman in and said, screw it. We'll go 20% less eligibles. Not that Bergstrom couldn't run a route, but it's unlikely. And we still have our run action pass stuff off of it, but we're going to get more impactful carries in the run game. Receivers. Terry was awesome. There's some things we can clean up, but for the most part, when you attack Xavier Rhodes the way he did and you sell vertical and you win, it's big time. And he had a hitch on third and one. That we've been lacking that kind of guy for a while. He's that kind of a guy. Big time on the bootleg where he's wide open. That would have been awesome to get that throw in that situation. Couple good routes down the field where he's really pushing off and selling. A couple things really you could talk about. one less step at the top of routes. One less step would be absolutely huge for him. He's got sometimes 4 to 5 steps. All of these guys, one less step at the top of the route. Harmon, Richardson, one less step at the top of the route would help. And then some of the situations where you just understand where you don't want the DB to take you would be helpful for these guys. Offensive line, I thought the offensive line was actually okay in this game. Not always awesome. The one thing that will help is getting a little bit lower, especially on our right side, Sheriff and Moses coming off the ball a little bit lower. I think that's what's hurting Sheriff with some of these holding penalties. Is he's getting his hat above the defensive tackle's hat, and so he's too high, and he's trying to torque and use his upper body, which is creating holding, as opposed to using his lower body and hips to drive. So him playing a little bit lower, I think, will be really helpful for him. Look, I'm not going to say that we're like kicking butt up front. Gave up a couple pressures. You didn't give up. You didn't get as much drive in a couple situations as you'd wanted to. Oh, one other thing that I noted. With all of the motions and all of the fly action, and this is this week, last week, throughout this season, last season involved, when linebackers are bumping and moving in the box, we got to know where we're going. We continue to leave linebackers free and unblocked. Two double teams going to one linebacker. We got to have one double team going to one double team going to the other. We have to call them out. We have to communicate. We have to identify them. That is one of the problems we've had in the run game so far this year, is we're leaving free players that shouldn't be free players. So the communication and understanding where we want to go is going to be huge. And I think a big part of that is understanding what motions are going to do, fly sweep motion, action in the backfield, what some of these motions are going to do and how those backers are going to react. Like, hey, if we motion here and these backers boss or bump over to this spot, now where do we want to go? How do we want to handle that in that situation? You got a big task with the Buffalo Bills this week. The Eagles gashed him in the run game. The Redskins should be able to run the football. I'll be really interested to see if Trent comes back and how that's handled. We'll be really interested to see what goes on at the quarterback position. If Case is back, if Dwayne's in, I do think it's time for Dwayne to play. I'm just one of those 1-7 is time to figure out what we have in the future believers versus we got to win 4 games this year. I just don't see a massive benefit in winning 4 games. But in hindsight, or on the flip side of that, I do understand that coaches want jobs and players want to win. And so I will be rooting for them to win ball games because of that understanding, just with that little tidbit in the back of my mind that if we don't, it's actually okay. Just okay for me, not okay for everyone else. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Appreciate it. Have a good one. Make sure you stick around, though. We have a Redskins Park update coming for you.
Have you heard about Creighton Farms, the private club community that's home to the Redskins? Creighton Farms is just 20 minutes from Dulles, but a world away. On top of its award-winning Jack Nicklaus signature golf course, pools, tennis courts, and other resort-style amenities, you'll find custom homes and villas that are simply extraordinary, starting at $1.5 million. For property and legal information, visit CreightonFarms.com. Or, better yet, visit Creighton Farms.
At Coke, our 67,000 U.S. employees make things that make your game days better, like fertilizer for greener turf and stronger paper products for tailgating. Viewing the game from your couch? Coke also makes the electronic components and TVs and smart devices so you can watch your Redskins victory anywhere. Coke, we make that. See it all at kochmakesthat.com. That's kochmakesthat.com.
Time to tailgate. We have my Honda CRV with class-leading cargo space so I can bring the grill. Cousin Bobby's Honda Pilot with seating for 8. And my brother's Honda Ridgeline loaded with fun features like in-bed speakers and an in-bed trunk. Nothing left to do now but sit back and wait for kickoff. Who wants a hot dog?
Get more this season with a great deal on a new Honda, perfect for tailgating. See your local Honda dealer today.
In a world full of lines, lines for everything. Ugh. Nails that incapacitate you till they dry. Red lights, so many lights.
Ah, for the love of...
Coffee that drips at the speed of molasses. And seasons that just won't change.
Ball, where you at?
In a world full of waiting, we've put our proverbial foot down. We give you the print and play rolling jackpot from the Virginia Lottery, starting at 50K and rolling, and you can win it, that's right, instantly. But you will have to wait for the odds. Odds of winning top prize, 1 in 240,000.
Hi, this is Larry Michael with the Redskins Park Update. The team wrapping up practice on Wednesday. Back on the practice field on Thursday for Sunday's matchup at Buffalo. The Bills, a very tough team, tough defensively. Josh Allen, the quarterback, and the great Frank Gore, the running back. For the Redskins, well, Trent Williams is back in the building, but still uncertain of his status moving forward. More on that later this week here at Redskins Park. That's today's Redskins Park Update. I'm Larry Michael.